My name is Laurens Schacht, and welcome to Cybersecurity Talks, the interview podcast for cybersecurity professionals and for those who aspire to become one. Join us on our journey and learn about the latest trends, real-life war stories, and everything you need to know about this fascinating industry. Welcome back to Cybersecurity Talks. I'm very happy and excited to announce today's guest, Hugo van Thorn. Hugo has been in the field since 2013 and is currently the Chief Information Security Officer at the HEMA. For the non-Dutch listeners, this is one of the most famous and well-known retail stores in the Netherlands. HEMA is now active in 7 countries on 2 different continents and has more than 17,000 employees. Hugo started his career at Deloitte and helped Deloitte's red team grow from 2 to 20 consultants. After 5 years at Deloitte, he joined Outpost 24 as the manager for their offensive security. In 2022, he joined HEMA as their new CISO. Now, welcome to the show, Hugo. It's a real pleasure having you. Before we dive into the cybersecurity topics, I was curious, how do you spend your time and your days when you're not working or thinking about your job as a CISO?
Well, I think that's the beauty of cybersecurity, right? It is always on your mind. It doesn't matter whether you're going out for a nice walk or when you have some downtime to do some research. Yeah, it pays off to be geeky in that sense.
But it's a 24/7 job. Before we started, you said I will turn off my phone or on silent because either it could be an incident or my girlfriend's calling. Is that going around like 7 days a week?
Yeah, always. Yeah, should always be available either myself or someone on the team in case anything happens.
Is that stressful?
No. And I always find it funny when people are like, hey, what keeps you up at night? I'm like, well, if the work stress keeps you up at night, you have the wrong job.
Yeah. So you sleep like a baby still.
Yeah.
Nice. And you've been now in the field for 10 years. But what was your first experience related to cybersecurity?
Whew, that goes way back. I think the one thing that really comes to mind is being able on MSN Messenger to open someone's disk drive. You know, the CD-ROMs for the younger listeners, like a Blu-ray, but then older.
Yeah, I had it as well, yeah. That was the geeky stuff, if you could open a CD-ROM of somebody else, yeah.
Exactly, you have these weird characters running around someone's screen or open a disk drive. Later on, maybe some more interesting things with phishing, with fake Hotmail, web pages, things like that.
Yeah.
Really cool to show off to your friends. Like, look, this really looks trustworthy and maybe someone will enter the password. Of course, you never send it, but it's so cool to show your friends you're a hacker.
And now you've been in the field for over 10 years. What makes it still so fascinating for you?
Every day is different, whether it's some new technology that comes around, whether it's other ways to defend the company or other ways that companies can be hacked. It's very interesting to just dive in and see what's this all about.
Yeah. And what was it for you, the pivotal moment that you thought, okay, I really want to work in this field? Because you started your career at Deloitte after your master's degree. You started as an intern and then you stayed there for over 5 years.
Yeah, it's a bit of a funny story. I mean, I was always very fascinated by computers and, well, like the minor hacking stuff and gaming and setting up game servers and just in general doing stuff, trying to figure out how these bloody computers work. And then I was like, okay, I studied IT. But I always have been very much of a generalist, right? I want to know a bit about everything. Well, not everything, but most things. To be able to say something about it, know how it works, really understand it a bit more than just reading about something. And then I saw some articles around security and I happened to stumble across a vacancy for an intern at Deloitte. And I figured, yeah, why not? Let's give it a try.
And this was in 2013. What was sort of the state of cybersecurity back then? When you had your first day, do you still remember what was going on?
Yeah, I remember vividly being very much impressed by all these cyber gurus that were working at Deloitte back in the day when I joined, feeling like an absolute noob, not knowing too much about anything, but very eager to jump in and learn from everyone. It has been a great time and a great kickstart as well for my career.
And you started in the red team and so more on the offensive side?
Well, yeah, I started as an intern. There was no red team. There was no such thing. Red teaming was a term no one ever heard of, apart from the military. So I started writing my thesis on social engineering. Because in determining the subject of my thesis, we figured out, well, this human element is pretty interesting. Maybe there's a way here for companies such as Deloitte to incorporate social engineering tactics in actual services they can deliver for customers. And I think the most tangible example came on early on during my internship, phishing. There was no tool around that allowed companies to send phishing emails, see if people clicked, report on the statistics. But during my research, I mean, even back then, if you would search phishing and attack, then you would see numbers like 70% of companies are breached through social engineering, through phishing. So that was really exciting. So I really set out to take a deep dive in these different techniques, phishing, physical penetration testing, voice phishing, SMS phishing, and then translating that into actual services Deloitte could offer.
And was it difficult to sell this as a service? It's such a new field, so I wonder how do you come up with a nice pitch to a client about red teaming services if it doesn't really exist?
Yeah, I think it went very very naturally at Deloitte, because they were obviously already selling pen testing to their customers, so the customers were already interested in security. And then you can pitch like, hey, have you ever thought about phishing? Nowadays that seems like the most normal thing companies worry about, but back then it was really special, really eye-opening, especially for the first few customers we had. But it was also really cool for me to see all the things that I researched and developed were actually being put in practice.
Yeah, that's super nice that you were one of the first guys then within Deloitte to work on this. Yeah. And now phishing, as you said, it's everywhere. It's probably the first thing that the CISO would think about, awareness, phishing campaigns.
Yeah, exactly. And it actually kickstarted after my internship. So I wrote this whole thesis, did my internship, decided to stick around at Deloitte. And then one of the managers that came over from the UK to the Netherlands, he read my thesis. And he was like, this is cool. We're going to make something out of this. And then that's really funny. He wanted to call it red teaming. So at other companies, there was some speech about, okay, red teaming, that sounds cool. It's very military, right? That's where it originates from.
And why is that? From the military? Why did the military call it red teaming?
Because they would conduct simulation attacks on their own troops, their own organizations, to check, okay, we have this defense. Does it really work?
Yeah.
And that's what red teaming is all about. So back then, the senior manager wanted to call it red teaming, but Deloitte was like, no, that sounds way too offensive. So we ended up calling it covert operations when we started. We delivered covert operations for many customers, and then a few years down the road, red teaming became a thing, and yeah, we had to rebrand.
But that's a bummer. You could have been the team that actually claimed the name red teaming.
I mean, we still did, right?
Yeah, you still did. But perhaps you missed out on an opportunity there. Yeah.
Yeah.
But nice. It's an incredible journey, because you mentioned before we started the conversation that team really grew. It was one of the fastest growing teams in the whole of Deloitte, I believe, that you went from two or three people to 20 or even more. And you also took an important role in that. Can you elaborate a bit on your journey during those 5 years? What happened? How did you develop yourself?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think that went really fast, especially with all the great minds around. It was a really fast journey. I started out doing pen testing, and let's say the regular pen testing, so web application testing, infrastructure testing, you name it, mobile applications.
Were you a good pen tester already? Where did you pick up these skills?
I learned a lot on the job. Like I said, I came in pretty much as a rookie. Learning on the job. And I think that's very important as well. When you start, you really need a good team around you so you can pull yourself up on those who know way more. And like I said in the beginning, what I already also learned during my time at university is that I wanted to know a lot, right? So yes, I started doing pen testing, but after 1.5 years, I was pretty much done with pen testing and really started focusing on the red teaming. Also did a lot of hacking demos and presentations for customers because I was this weird hacker guy that also liked interacting with people.
That's scarce, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, and then you covered the hacking part. You went more into the offensive side. I guess people within Deloitte saw that you're a talented and ambitious guy, and it gave you more responsibilities because you grew the team also.
Yeah, so I really grew from the regular pen test to almost exclusively doing red teaming engagements. I would also always focus on the parts that I specialized in, right? So that was really the social engineering, the phishing, so physically breaking into banks, airports, any company. And it's really funny. Even nowadays, when I drive over the highway, you see a company, you're like, I've been inside that building.
Okay, nice. I'm very curious. How did you get in? Can you give an example without perhaps mentioning a client? But how do you enter a bank, and how nervous were you?
Yeah, pretty nervous. It's always this mindset that you need to apply. If you don't belong somewhere, you will automatically assume you don't belong there, and people will think you stick out. Whereas other people, they have no clue, right? So just act normal, try to blend in, and then you'll get away with it most of the times. But a very simple example is one of my first assignments. Just walk in, you see the reception, you smile and wave, you say hello, and you walk on in.
That easy.
That easy. Other times it's slightly more difficult. You need to tailgate someone in, right, to a turnstile. In most cases, you have more than enough room to follow someone through a turnstile or to catch a door before it closes behind someone. So it can be very easy. And that's one of the security elements. If you never realize it's an attack factor, then you will not protect against it.
Did you ever get caught?
I did get caught once. That was my first ever assignment at a government agency in the Netherlands. It was still part of my internship even. So we agreed with this customer that we would test it. We had this great scenario. And then right before I entered, my manager back then was like, no, you cannot show your real ID. I was like, yeah, but attackers will also fake their ID, but I cannot fake my ID because that's illegal. Yeah, well, you cannot show it. So I got busted right at the reception. Yeah, I have a meeting with this guy. Do you have your ID? No. Okay, then please take a seat.
You sat there the whole day.
I sat there for a while. I did manage to get out. So in that sense, I did not really get caught. On LinkedIn, I found someone with the same name who worked at a company two buildings down the block. So I was like, oh, I had to be at this office meeting with this person. Oh, that's not you. Oh, okay. Most awkward conversation ever, but hey, they didn't stop me and I got out again. So.
Oh, that's so funny that you, for a living, have to go through these awkward conversations.
Yeah, it can be really fun. And sometimes it's more challenging. Like once we had to break into a bank, that involved way more. It involved climbing over a fence, dropping down onto the building, tailgating people in. But general rule of thumb, the best way in is by using the people that smoke. Because they're very social, they like to talk, and you can easily blend in even if you don't smoke. just have a chat and follow them inside and no questions asked.
And what happens afterwards? So you make it through the first line of defense, and then you're inside the company. What's your mission then?
It can be different. I mean, up front, you always discuss the objectives with the customer. Sometimes it's only get into the office. Sometimes it's put a sticker on a certain desk or get access to a server room, for example. But in most cases, what the objective would be, because it's part of a larger project, is that we would physically break in. We would place a so-called Dropbox. So it would allow the actual cool network hacker guys to come in through 4G, through this Dropbox that's connected straight into their internal network.
Okay.
So then we can hack them from the inside out. So we put the box there and we walk away.
Well, what type of box is this then? I'm also a noob. don't get me wrong.
Yeah, it depends. I mean, we have used just general routers that we reconfigured so we can connect back to them. But it can also be a tiny Raspberry Pi in a nice Pelican case where you simply go in, it's battery powered, you plug in a cable and you go out and it works magically. Of course, it's also encrypted. So should the blue team find them, they're going to have a lot of fun with it because they cannot find anything. So yeah, we also used to make fun of the blue team every now and then by putting in some little hints so they knew it was us.
Wow, this is so much fun. And that was really a new type of service then you would provide. And I've over the years spoke with so many hackers, but all of them like these red teaming exercises. Because it really, the physical aspect to it is probably the most exciting, like Kevin Mitnick style, really going into every company that you see.
Yeah, that's the thing. And it's also a bit of a downside because we noticed back at Deloitte that all the hackers wanted to be part of the red team, but it's never a substitution for pen testing. It also shouldn't be like your end goal to be red teaming. And especially nowadays, the term is used and abused everywhere, right? I've seen vacancies for a red team consultant for mobile applications. Well, red teaming especially should entail the physical and the people aspect as well. I'm not sure where those are in mobile application testing, but.
Yeah. And now you've became a CISO. What are the experiences you learned at Deloitte that you now use in your day-to-day activities yourself to keep out the guys and girls like yourself? And then you were still working for Deloitte as ethical people, but you also face non-ethical people in your current organization.
Yeah.
How do you protect yourself? And what did you learn back then that you implement nowadays?
Yeah, I think most of the things that I learned back then are still really much applicable to what I do nowadays. Because, yeah, I switched sides, right? I had a year of more sales, but always with a red teaming flair. And now really much on the blue side to defend the organization. But I think everything that is applied by red teamers is equally interesting for blue teamers. If you know how an attack works, you know how to defend against it. If you know how to defend against something, you should know how the attack works. So it really goes both ways. Hence also the strength in doing purple teaming, right? Collaboration between the red and blue team to together make the organization more resilient against hacks.
Yeah, it's fascinating. How do you feel about the attempts that you did for Deloitte and after 5 years you joined Outpost 24, but also again on the red teaming on the offensive side. Did it become more difficult for you and your team to get in? Did your attacks become more sophisticated over the years?
Yeah, more sophisticated, yes, but not necessarily more difficult, because that's the great thing about consulting is that you have such a wide variety of customers. Some will be very immature, others will be very mature, and anything in between, right? I think it's a nice resemblance of the actual world, right, and reality. Some companies are more secure than others. So sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's hard. But the most important thing for a red team is to always keep on developing, right? Always keeping up to date with new attacks, new attack factors, new tools. Also develop your own tools, right? If you're a quote-unquote red team, but you only borrow other people their tools and use their knowledge and just replicate attacks, yeah, it's going to get old very quickly.
And then what are you most proud of during those days? Is there some hack that you simulated that you feel like, wow, we were so creative back then?
I think I'm just most proud of the colleagues that I've been able to grow, right? That's always the thing. I mean, like I said in the beginning, I can hack, but I know there's other guys who can do it way better, guys or girls that can do it way better. My personal success is to see others grow in that. And for me, in the end, to see a happy customer, right? And then go back to the team, improve. And I think that's very important. If you want to have a professional team of hackers, give them the ability to develop, give them the ability to grow, and also be critical in your own work.
And how is it to lead a team of hackers? It's not the easiest group. I think that they're really diverse type of people. They really like to be independent. How is it to manage them?
Yeah, I think it's pretty similar to other teams. But the most important thing is to speak the lingo, right? You can have a great people manager on a hacking team, but if they don't understand what the team is doing or what they should be doing, then no one will take them serious, right? So yeah, it's all about speaking the same language as your team so you can level with them. And yeah, sometimes it's just like herding cats, right? I've had guys who just went in during an assignment without me knowing. And then you get a call, hey, I'm caught. Oh, okay, well, that's interesting. I thought we discussed something else. Oh yeah, we misunderstood. But also other guys who would sleep during the day and work at night. And again, it's fine as long as I get feedback and I know what you're doing and you deliver. But yeah, sometimes it can be challenging, but I guess you have that in any team, not specifically hackers, but they have their specific quirks.
Yeah. And what was the most fascinating day with Outpost 24? Can you share something spectacular?
Yeah, I guess it's the day we breached an airport. It was pretty interesting. I mean, we spend a lot of time to navigate the network, circumvent security controls. And then we were very close to getting access to the physical security controls, right? So the controls of the airport where you can open and close the door, turn on and off alarms, very crucial things. And I remember this so vividly. One of the guys, he tried to log in. Obviously, you try password 12345. I mean, even back at Deloitte was one of those things. It was called pulling a Tom. Shout out to you, Tom. Always, always, always try the most simple password, tester, tester, 12345, admin, admin. Always make sure you test something simple like that. So back at the airport, he tried to log in with 12345 and was like, damn, it doesn't work. So then we went back. What would work? And he was like, I got it. 12345 6. And we're like, yeah, it's not gonna. It worked. Huh, that's interesting.
Shit.
And then we got full control over the airport, which I think is very fascinating.
That's very scary. And what happens then? Then you have a satisfied client or extremely worried client?
Well, that's the best thing about red teaming. If you get in, you give the customer great recommendations on what to do, so they're happy. If you don't get in, you also have a happy customer because their security controls work. So it's always a win-win and we always have fun.
You can always come back for more.
Exactly.
But that's a really nice anecdote, yeah. But how do you went about it? Is it a whole team that's working on it? And where do you start such an attack?
It really depends on what the customer wants. I mean, beforehand, during the scoping, you also guide the customer through, right? And if you pitch something like red teaming, it's always like, oh, cool, James Bond, we want everything. Okay, it's going to cost you X. And then they don't want everything anymore. But you also got to be realistic about it, right? I also cannot stand sales that tries to sell bullshit, right? You need to do everything. No, you need to do what's applicable for your organization. Chances that someone are going to physically try and break into your building are going to be very slim, unless you're an airport or you're a company that might be targeted by terrorists, for example. Then you must think about physical security. But if you're a grocery store, then just skip the whole physical part. Assume they got in and just test your network.
Yeah. So you advise them also on this before you start?
Yeah.
But can I assume that with the airport, there was a big element of hacking into the physical security?
Yeah, for the airport itself, we had to skip that part. Because then, yeah, you also get in parts that are controlled by the government, and
Army people.
Army people.
Could get really ugly.
So we skipped that part. So we focused on the offices, which we came into. And then we separately tested the internal network at the airport.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. And do you feel the last 10 years you've been in a phase where cybersecurity got so much more attention, and this is really the most fascinating decade so far of cybersecurity? Or are we just in the beginning and there's way more stuff coming at us?
There's always going to be more, but it's one of those things, again, you should not be afraid of what's coming, because you cannot really compare the world in 50 years how it has been 10 years ago, right? Before that time, we didn't have computers, so yeah, we didn't really care about them, let alone security, right? But I think as any field, technology grows, security has to grow as well.
True. Yeah, very much true. And I want to switch gears a little bit and dive a bit deeper into your current experience, because after, say, 9 years of being on the offensive side and working a lot of different organizations as a consultant, you decided to join HEMA, which is a huge organization. Before we put on the microphones, I also told you it's so magnificent to see that your first job after consultancy companies is already CISO, and then also at the HEMA, which is a huge international company now. How did this came about? I'm very curious.
Well, for me personally, it was time for change, right? Indeed, after 9-10 years of consulting, it becomes a bit repetitive, right? You get X number of customers per week, you give them a report, hopefully they fix it, and then the year after you do another test, and sometimes you're lucky, they've done something. Sometimes you're not so lucky and you give them the same report with another timestamp. For me, it was really time to switch gears, go to the other side, and actually be able to make an impact on the organization by actually following up on the things that have to change. The boring part of this story is I just saw an ad on LinkedIn and I applied.
nothing fancy over there.
No, and I think that's very important. I mean, I also back in the days got the question like, how do you get started at Deloitte? And if you look at forums like Reddit, and how do you get into cybersecurity? Just apply. It can be that simple. Yeah. But just make sure that even though you don't have to write papers, your passion for security shines through, because that's way more important. If you show you care and you can grow and you develop yourself and you know some tools and some specific areas you really like, it's very likely to just land a job. So don't waste your time on asking like, hey, how can we become a hacker? Or how do you apply to this job? How do you get into company X? It doesn't matter. Just find a company that works for you, because truth being said, I have a great time at Deloitte, but it's not for everyone. If you want to be a hacker, find a company that fits your needs and just apply.
Would you feel you need some prior experience, or is it better to showcase that you're a big fanatic person already doing stuff at home? Because I feel that's usually more important, but I'm curious how you see that.
Yeah, that's absolutely more important. I mean, even back in the days when I applied at Deloitte for my internship, you would get onboarded as consultant. So you would have the same assessments. You would have the same interview rounds. But they also asked me like, hey, do you have a master's? Because we see it on your resume. Yes, I put it in like between brackets, like I probably want to do my master's, but if I feel like it, after this internship. But they were very adamant, like, yeah, we only hire people who have a master's degree. But in all fairness, during my master's degree, besides being able to think critically and research and write papers in a specific format, I did not learn anything about security or anything that I apply on a daily basis. So for me, it's way more important that someone shows why they're interested in security, why they have this passion. And yes, having the right papers, like having studied IT, either bachelor or master's, it helps. It sets a certain expectation for the hiring manager, but it does not tell the entire story. I mean, there can be 1,000 reasons why someone did not follow a certain study, But as long as they can show like, hey, I really love security because I built this, and just throw in a link to your GitHub repository so we can check out your code and the projects you worked on, that's way more valuable.
So as a hiring manager, you're not looking for that cum laude master degree. You don't care about it.
I don't care about it. No.
Yeah.
I mean, you can have it and still be an utter dick and not fit in the team. Then I'm still not going to hire you, even despite you have all the papers and all the certifications in the world. I would rather hire someone who does not have all the papers, but is way more passionate about security, because that's going to give me the benefit.
And to go back to your 10 months at HEMA now, what was it like the first days, weeks being the CISO? I assume then everybody's all of a sudden looking at you. You're the on top of the mountain.
you're the security guy.
Yeah, you have to do it. Were you impressed with the levels of security at HEMA, or how was it in the beginning?
Yeah, I think the key thing to do when you join a company, whether it's a CISO or as any other function internally, is to really get to know the people. And within AMA, I found everyone really has this drive. So they will do anything it takes to grow the brand, because everybody loves the brand, right? Everybody loves AMA. The most things I've been doing, especially in the beginning, is just talk. Get to know all the people. Who are the stakeholders? Who does what? How does the company work, right? You do not fully grasp how a distribution center works until you've been there in between 40 meter tall cranes that pick up giant pallets full of products and that are automatically putting them on different spots before they can be picked by people and then shipped to the stores. It's a big process that you need to see and feel and experience to really understand. And then you tie it together with the people, and then you can start saying something about security.
Yeah, for the non-Dutch listeners, HEMA is just really an awesome company. I think everybody in the Netherlands knows the company HEMA, but as you said, they sell everything from flowers to cakes to famous sausages to baby clothes to photos. Everything you think you need, you can find at the HEMA. But it must be such a supply chain indeed, and delivery service. So there are a lot of things you have to take care of. Yeah, it's not an e-commerce company. It has to offer a lot of different services. Yeah, so I can imagine there are a lot of different challenges.
Yeah, we also do e-commerce. Yeah, but indeed, it's learning about so many aspects of the organization. It also means we have a big backlog for the security team. But that's fine, right? It's a nice challenge. And that's then back to the CISO role. You need to be able to understand the threats that apply to all those different business areas so you can prioritize and then set out the different projects and take actions from there.
And how do you go about the prioritization when you step in?
Well, that was relatively easy because we have a great internal audit team. So they've already done a lot of assessments. So when you speak to them, it's like, well, we've seen a few things here and there. You might want to have a look in that direction.
Yeah. And then what's on your mind now? Are there specific threats or things that you feel, okay, that this maybe not per se related to HEMA, but just the industry trends that keep you up at night or that worry you?
Again, they luckily don't keep me up at night. But I think it's very important, especially for bigger organizations. The bigger you are, the more vendors you have. And it's, at least that's what I've noticed, it's really hard to get a grip on the vendor process, whether it's a very small vendor who just sets up one website, or now the dozen of vendors who want to do something with AI. You need to make sure that the business can do their work safely. And that's where we come in. So we have to review the vendors as well. And I don't think it's the most charming part of the job, but it is key to really get a grip on your vendor security.
And since you stepped in, did it match your expectations to be a CISO? Or is it harder or easier? Is it more fun? Is it less fun? I'm just curious.
No, what do you think? It really matches. I mean, like any job, it will have great days and not that great days, right? and it has more fun tasks and less fun tasks. But overall, it definitely matches my expectations. Like I said earlier, it's all about finding an organization that matches you, not just for hackers, but also for CISOs, for ESOs, for privacy officers, for whatever role you have that, yeah, not even touches on security. The organization needs to be a match with you and the way you work. And especially within HEMA, we have the Mondo principles. They're Dutch, I'm not going to translate everything. But the D is all about being dapper, being brave. That means in business, just take the risk, try something, do something new, and push it. And that is my whole purpose throughout, also at Deloitte while inventing new services, or at Outpost when pushing a new service or trying something new, getting new tools. And now in being CISO, it's all about challenging the status quo. Never just settle for what is, but apply this hacker mindset to anything you do. Maybe things are better differently. Just give it a shot and try it and see if it works. And if not, yeah. It might be a waste of time, but at least you try it, you know it doesn't work, and focus on something else.
But with HEMA, the way I saw it the last years, that it's a very traditional company, and you strike me as a person that really wants to go fast and challenge the status quo. Well, how do your colleagues see you now? All of a sudden there's a security team and people saying what to do and what not to do. I think as a CISO, that's also one of the challenges, like how do the company listens to your team? Do they see you as the police guy or as the cool guy?
A bit of both, right? I mean, security is always annoying if you want to do things fast, but it's always a necessary evil. And it's very, you really need to translate to the people why it's important, and not for me, but for the organization and for them, for their team, for their product. But I also think that relates back a bit to what I was told in university, where during my graduation, they said, you like to get things done. Yeah, I like change. You also don't like slackers. True. And you're very much a no-nonsense person, right? And that's very much true. When I heard it, I was a bit doubtful, like, not sure if this is a compliment, but reflecting back a few years later, I think it's very much true. So yeah, sometimes people will be slackers, and yeah, I'll be pushing them to get things done. But that's fine. That's part of the game, right? Sometimes you need to chase people to get things done. But I think it's very important for a CISO to fit with the organization. And especially within HEMA, you said we're traditional, and yeah, we're almost 100 years old. But we've made a massive transition to being a digital native company. Anything we do is digital nowadays. Our e-commerce website is one of the best websites in the Netherlands. There's so much development going on. There's so much purchases being done online as well, for example. And there's also a lot of innovation coming back to the stores in the new store concept that we recently launched. There's all these new elements, also digital things that we add into the stores, right? But I think it's important for an organization that the type of CISO also really fits. And you have, of course, let's say more traditional type of CISO, the older guys who are really compliance driven or have a background in auditing or in finance, and they grow into this role. But I think for other companies, they might benefit more from a technically rooted CISO, such as myself, to be able to also do hands-on things, to understand the technology, to really push the organization forward. And that's what I'm doing now. I have a great basis that I landed in. I'm going to expand it, build out a team, and then push further. And that's a great opportunity for me.
Yeah, I love what you're saying, because it's really, you're sort of the modern day CISO. I think we need more CISOs like yourself, and especially your background from the offensive side, I think really gives you a good overview of what's the threat landscape for companies such as HEMA will become more digitally every day.
Yeah, absolutely. And whether it's a red teaming background or a blue teaming background, it doesn't matter. I mean, as we said in the beginning, knowledge of either side is great to have. And I think it can be applied by any CISO in real life. But again, there might be organizations who are way more mature and they would benefit more of a more compliance-driven CISO. So I think there's a place for both. But I think it's a shift in a newer generation of CISOs.
So it should be a good match between the type of person, the type of CISO and the company.
Absolutely. I think it's crucial for success.
Well, what I wanted to ask you, because if I would become the CISO of a company with 17,000 employees, and it was the first time for me becoming a CISO, I would be scared. Like the night before, I would probably not have a great night. But I think you really seem excited. You sit here with a big smile. So you were very excited to start.
It's just a great challenge, right? And whether it's 1,000 or 17,000 or 19,000 employees, it's just numbers. It doesn't matter for what you do. You do your best. And again, if it doesn't work or you still got hacked, then I know I've done my best, right? And that's all I can do.
But there's a lot of responsibility on your shoulders. It's a dreadful job in a way, because you can do as much as you can indeed, as you say. But somebody could make one small mistake somewhere in a store in France or in Germany, clicks on something weird, or somebody steps in. And with 17,000 people and all sorts of services, online, offline, yeah, the room for error, of course, is very big. So it's a very difficult job. But I think then it's more also looking at, and not only prevention, but then also detection, and what do we do in case something happens?
Absolutely. And of course, the chance that something happens gets bigger with the size of the company. But it also means that the investments you do in the technology that you can use on the other side to follow up, to detect, to respond, should be equal, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the higher the risk, the higher the budget, most likely. And for you, is this then the sweet spot? Because HEMA is a big company, but it's nothing compared to a huge financial institution or Swift. But it's also not a startup, far from that. So is this sort of the field that you like to play in? Or would you see yourself in the future being part of like a huge multinational as the CISO?
Again, it doesn't really matter, right? It's all about having the company that works for you. And for me, HEMA is a great place. It's a great opportunity to also kickstart my career as CISO and to make that switch. Maybe in a few years, there's a financial institution where I have a great match. I mean, and that is also one of the positive sides of being a consultant. I have seen so many organizations of many different sizes on the inside that I know what a fun company feels like, right?
Yeah. And now you're 10 months in. Can you explain to the listeners what an average day for you looks like? Or is it every day completely different? And is there something that you can schedule in the agenda? Or is it completely carte blanche? Every day is different.
Yeah, I think every day is different. There are some parts that you schedule, like the ongoing projects, meeting up with stakeholders, checking in with the team daily. Of course, we have daily stand-up. So yeah, we need to be aligned internally. And sometimes it's looking at dashboards. How can we improve on the reporting, for example, towards management? Should we introduce new metrics, new key risk indicators? Whereas other days, I'm sitting with some guys on the team to really take a look at, hey, how can we improve our technical controls? I mean, even this morning, it was not scheduled, but we rolled out a CIS compliance tool for MacBooks because, yeah, apparently designers like MacBooks. So we need to secure those as well.
So it's pretty hands-on still as well.
And I really love that mix of hands-on and also the paperwork. And I've always been weird like that, right? I don't mind Excel, I don't mind PowerPoint, and I don't mind my Outlook app. Anything that's in my Outlook app is a to-do item for me.
You're a man of many traits, yeah. But what's the for you the best part of being a CISO?
The best part, I think, is also what I started with. It's the people. working with people, having the people in the team grow, working with all the different stakeholders, seeing the security improve overall of the organization, showing other people why security is important, or show how we're growing. It just gives me a lot of energy.
I can tell. Great. What's the worst thing?
Also people.
How come?
No, but that's the thing. I mean, the statistics I read on during my social engineering internship still very much hold true. If malware is launched, it rarely happens automatically. It's always someone who does something. And then it's our job to jump in, investigate, what did this person do, contact them, see, hey, why did you do this? So people, they're the best and the worst at the same time.
The people are still the worst link, probably, or the most fragile thing in every organization.
Yeah, I wouldn't say they're the worst link.
But the weakest,
Yeah, also not necessarily the weakest, they're the most important. And that's very funny because we way back at Deloitte, we had a customer, a large financial institution, and we were discussing fiscal scenarios, of course, how to get in. And then we learned there was an incident that weekend where an employee got offered money for their access badge. So on a Friday afternoon, people would stand outside of the institution, would wait for someone with their badge to walk out, and then they say, hey, do you want 500 euros? And the security team was like, yeah, but why would someone do it? And we're like, well, you wouldn't do it because you have a well-paid position and you can go home at 4 probably on Friday, go home and have weekends where, for example, a cleaner is still busting their ass off in the office, cleaning all your mess for a very low wage, and they go out and they have a great opportunity to make a quick 500 bucks, just give their badge, and a week after tell the security that they lost their badge.
And this was not somebody from Deloitte. This was an outsider.
It was not someone from Deloitte, no.
But it's great that that specific person did
Did
mention this offense. But indeed, some people might not do it.
Yeah, and so they reported it correctly. And it really shows how people can be your greatest assets, but also your the easiest way in, probably. Because if someone has a bad day, they will respond differently to a phishing email or a phone call that they receive. But if you have a great day, then you might like, this is phishing and I'll report it and be done with it and feel good about it.
But it's interesting to see how these two fields combine, sort of the physical aspect really going from a criminal going to a person with 500 euros in cash. And then what comes afterwards, beforehand, you go into a bank. That's how criminals would steal money. Nowadays, they go into a bank and then they set a seed to go in electronically. And so it's very interesting to see how these two fields are combined now. And even more interesting that you were at the beginning of all this in your career 10 years ago. So that's, I think you started in a really interesting time.
It has been a great ride. Yes.
Yeah, it's a really good ride. Yeah. And what would you now advise youngsters? So if you could speak to yourself 10 years ago or to other boys and girls finalizing their studies, what would you tell them?
Yeah, I think it's again coming back to challenging the status quo, right? Don't just assume if you read a giant wish list of an organization for their candidates that you need to match 100%. Don't even worry about the bachelor's or the master's that maybe you're working on, maybe you already have or you don't. Just make sure you compensate. And if your resume does not sell itself, then sell yourself with a cover letter, right? Explain, okay, hey, I don't have this bachelor, but I do have this project. I've done these hacking challenges. I'm working on this awesome project. Because that's so much more applicable, right? Having this hands-on knowledge and experience, that gives so many benefits to the organization that would hire you. So really focus on that and don't stare blind at the 10 years experience that recruiters might ask for technology that has been around for 5 years, because no one has that. So it's a wish list. You don't have to tick all the boxes. And if you want it, the company looks great, just go for it.
it's very relatable what you're saying. Yeah, because it, also from a recruitment perspective, we see that there's a major gap between supply and demand. And on the other side, we see a lot of youngsters that want to enter the field, but that they don't really get the opportunity. So if you want to apply for a big bank, they hardly have any starting positions. And if you want to apply for a starting position, there is that big list that they want to see on your resume. So I think there's still a big issue. So the supply, people want to join, but they don't really get that first opportunity. And I feel if more companies would look past just the CV and more at the person, then you have way more people that get that first step into the business. And I think then they would not leave. And that's, I think, the way forward. But so far, there's still a huge talent gap. And yeah, all the macroeconomic numbers showcase that this gap is not closing anytime soon. It's only going to grow in the next couple of years. So I think this is one of the main challenges for the security industry.
No. And that's always so frustrating, right? And you hear like, oh, we have a shortage of people. No, you're just looking for unicorns that everyone is looking for. I mean, yes, we're also looking for a unicorn still, but you know, it's more about giving people chances. There's also a lot of educational programs, for example, that focus specifically on youngsters that don't have the right certificates, right? They can join this program. They'll learn all about hacking, the defensive side of things, but also around policies and ethics. And they can be great assets to your company as well. Just because they don't have this paper, though, they'll fall in some kind of void, which shouldn't be the case. And also at the same time, as organization, you should not expect, okay, we hire someone and we're done. Especially within security, people need to constantly develop themselves. So I will also always fight to have significant budget for training and travels as well. Because if you want to be successful in the information security community, you need to know that community. You need to go out. You need to go to conferences. And it doesn't have to be the big ones like Black Hat and DEF CON in Vegas. It can also be local events. It can be BrewCon in Belgium. It can be CCC in Germany. It's all about seeing what is out there. And you don't have to participate actively. Just sitting at a conference, getting this feeling of what's out there, hearing these new cool stories, seeing some people share their war stories, that is crucial for your own success.
Yeah. Now, but therefore, also already a big shout out to you for doing this and inspiring also the next generation. That's something very important. And do you have other tips or advice for the young generation?
I think it's about staying legal, right? Within hacking, there's such a huge gray area. I think it's very much fueled also by a lot of bounty hunters, right? Sharing, oh, I got $10,000 here and $500,000 there. Don't fall for this advertisement, right? If you make smaller bounties, but a lot of them, yeah, you're not going to share all those like a huge success, but still you're making a lot of money. But don't expect anyone can be a bounty hunter. I know it's being hyped a lot and it helps to a degree. We also have our responsible disclosure program. But don't expect like magically you'll get rich by just doing that, right?
Yeah, I see that also a lot. Yeah, a lot of people want to become full-time bug bounty hunters. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah,
sounds
like I said,
sexy and appealing. Yeah.
It sounds very appealing, but also make sure you stay within the boundaries. When you do a responsible disclosure, follow the rules. Don't spam the organization with reminders because, hey, guess what? We have more things to do than just your report. We value it very much. We'll look at each and every submission. But don't expect us to reply every day with an update. Oh, yeah, these people are looking into it. These people are looking into it. The process needs time. And at the same time, make sure you don't get lured in the less legal side of hacking. Yes, it might be very profitable. Yes, you can maybe work with a lot of talented but shady people. But it's also a very short and fast way to get you in jail.
Yeah, that's scary. Don't look for that angle, kids. Stay sane. Yeah, that's... That's a nice way also to end this podcast. But before we really wrap it up, we always finalize with the last question. And I ask every guest this question, and this is the following. If there's one signal message that you can send to all fellow CISOs across the world, what would that message say?
Keep challenging the status quo.
Nice. Thank you so much, Hugo. It was a real pleasure.
Likewise. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to Cybersecurity Talks. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to review and subscribe. For all further information on our live events and new podcast releases, go to csrecruitment.nl. Thank you and stay safe.